This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, this is Joe's sister, Nikki. I think I might be the only girl in the world who has a brother who spends his entire day in the basement pretending he has an internet radio show.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and is it too late to start saving? Do you need to start now? On today's show, what needs to be done now and which money topics can you take your time and evaluate? Joining us for our discussion, from Rich Life Planning in Atlanta, Georgia, it's financial planner Bo Henderson. And from Afford Anything, it's Bruce Springsteen. We don't have the E Street Band, but we do have the hardest working woman in the financial media world, Paula Pant. And last but not least, it's OG. Midway through today's show, let's get you in shape for summer fun with your diet and exercise questions for Angelo Poli from MetPro. Finally, we'll magnify Tristan's money, who wants to know if precious metals should have a place in his portfolio. And don't worry, I'll get the brain juices flowing with my fireside-related trivia. And now, a guy who might finally be ready for his first credit card account, as long as a free Frisbee is included when you sign up, it's Joe Salcihan.
I don't think I like the Frisbee as much as I like the beach towel. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the weekend. Let me be the first to welcome you. I'm Joe Salcy. Hi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And what a wild bunch of financial commentators we have with us today. Starting across the table from me, he's wild. He's crazy. He's Mr. OG.
And he's on vacation all week this week. So,
wow. So you came out of
pulling me in on a Friday morning.
Week-long retirement for us. That's very nice.
I like to do what I can do.
How's it going? Good? Going well?
Well, I spent half of it with you, so you tell me.
it was fantastic. Oh, I forgot.
It was so amazing. You had to ask how it was.
I forgot we were together yesterday. I totally forgot. Yes. It's very memorable.
2 days ago, but still.
And the woman from Afford Anything, Paula Pant, is here.
You know, what's funny is that the intro talked about Bruce Springsteen born in the USA, and yes. I was not born in the USA.
One of these two was not born in the USA.
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, every time I hear that song, I'm like, braggart, yeah, gotta sure. Rub it in. Show you off. Were born in the USA and I wasn't. I get it.
Why don't you make your own song? Born in Nepal. That doesn't quite the same ring, but
yeah, I think it needs a different melody.
Oh, maybe. And the guy
moved
who
to the USA.
There it is. And the when she was what, four?
2 months.
2 months? Were you really that young?
I was 2 months old when I moved to the USA.
By the way, can you imagine that half a world plane trip with a 2 month old? I will pass.
I know, right? Exactly. Exactly. Imagine that 36 hour flight with a 2 month old.
Oh, Paula screaming her lungs out.
Yeah.
and the guy who's here to make the show. We're so happy to have him from the suburbs of Atlanta and the airwaves, the YouTube waves from Rich Life Advisors. Bo Henderson's back.
How's it going, guys? I can't tell you how excited I am to be here tonight with you guys or today. I've been spending the last 48 hours taking care of a sick 2.5-year-old. Not that I don't love you and want to spend time with you anyway, but it did give me permission to get up here out of the house and hand off the baby. So Bo, excited about that.
So, Bo, you're hoping for the longest show ever.
That's right. I thought this was going to be like a marathon.
That's what he said. You know what? If you decide to stay in studio once we're done, we won't tell anybody.
Well, and that's a whole other show we can do sometime, is talking about how to change your retirement, have a baby in your mid-40s.
Oh, good planning there, pal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, tell everybody about your practice, by the way, what you do.
Yeah, and we're here in North Metro Atlanta, and we do what I call holistic retirement planning, and it's the retirement planning you think of when we're dealing with the income planning, growth planning, healthcare, estate planning, tax planning, all those pieces together. But the piece that's really exciting and fun to me is the non-financial aspects of financial planning. And that's helping people get really clear on what the name of the firm, Rich Life, what makes their retirement rich, exciting, and fun. And let's use money as a tool to create that. And that's a lot of fun for me and very fulfilling for me to do it that way.
I think that's why you and I have always gotten along, is because I firmly believe that is just, it's money's just a fuel, right? For those goals.
Right. A tool for sure.
Yeah. Well, we got a great show. We got Bo with us. We got Paula. We got OG. We're going to talk about what things do you need to do right now with your financial plan and what can you wait on. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. All right, let's jump into this. We're going to talk about what do you need to do now with your financial plan.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Today's inspiration for the piece, we're not going to spend a lot of time with it, but it was certainly what inspired me to want to talk with the three of you about this, comes from a website called Banker on Fire. And the post is called "It Will Be Too Late Tomorrow." And this goes over the fact that, and shock of shocks, Bob and Adam start saving, Bob when he's 20 and Adam when he's 30, and they save $10,000 a year. And of course, Bob comes out way, way, way ahead. Actually, they save. Yeah, I don't know what they do here. Hold on.
I think the thing that gets confusing is the first guy stops after 10 years.
Dude saves $10,000 a year for 10 years and stops. Next dude starts at 30, saves $10,000 a year for 30 years. Dude one has way more cash.
Yes, there you go. Thank you guys for walking me through that. I think most of us have seen that. If you haven't seen that, welcome to the Miracle of Compounding Interest. That'll be a different show. But what it really led me to is this person says, you know what? You need to start when you're early. Well, we've shown that you can't go back in time. So start when you can, right? So I'm not worried about that, but I am worried about this concept of there are some things that maybe you should wait on, that you should take your time developing. And there's other things that, man, you need to get moving like yesterday. So, Bo is the guest. Let's have you kick this off. When you're working with people on their financial plan, what is the thing that we need to get moving right now?
This is going to sound really basic. It's just having a strategy. I say it's probably 95% of people, when I ask, do you have a financial strategy or retirement strategy? They look at me like I'm an alien. And I think if we don't get clear on what we're trying to move toward or build toward, you're just going to kind of spin your wheels. And if there's money in the account, you're going to spend it. And we're not going to have concrete goals. So to me, the first thing is just to have a plan or have some clarity around where are we trying to go? What is level one? What is foundation one? Then we can create a plan to move toward that.
Oh, gee, I like what Bo's saying there, because I remember when I used to go in and talk at companies, I would ask people what they're saving in their 401k, and they'd say 6% or 8% or 10%. And I would ask them, Bo, to your point, where is that going to take you? And people would have no idea. Then you'd ask, why did you pick that amount? Well, it was kind of what I can afford, but I like what he's saying, OG, about starting with the end in mind there.
It sounds really silly to say, and I think one of my favorite parts of conversations with clients, both probably the same way, is when you get to the point where you've saved enough money or you're on the right trajectory that you don't have to do that amount anymore, or you have opportunities for other goals. You have other flexibility kind of built to the plan. Last year, in the last 12 months, everybody's investment accounts are up 50 or 70 or 80 or 100%. And that sounds wonderful. You go, oh, I'm up all this money. What does that really kind of translate into? So what did I get from that? And what I've had a lot of joy in the last 4 or 5 months talking about is, hey, the last year bought you 3 more years of retirement. That's what a fantastic stay the course and the market goes crazy and skyrockets. Like, what does all that mean? It means that you bought yourself 3 years worth of retirement, or you bought yourself the flexibility to spend a little bit more today. You don't have to be as aggressive for saving, or that means that you can spend more money in retirement if that's what you really want to do. So what kind of translating what that flexibility turned into, I think, is super fun. But if you don't know where you're headed, like you said, when you say I'm saving 6%, what if you had to save 7? What if the magic number was 7 and you're at 6 and you find out at the very end, like, oh crap, I was off by 1%. So,
and I could have done it.
Too bad.
And I could have done
it. Yeah.
And how exciting of a conversation is that, though? Hey, I'm here to tell you, you just bought yourself a 3-year earlier retirement. I mean, that's the fun stuff.
Yeah, I absolutely love those are the fun conversations to have versus the, hey, what do you think about retirement at 70 instead of 55? Yeah, those were always
the reason your Social Security projection in your plan says 70 is because that's the soonest you can retire.
And you need every nickel you can get of that money.
Then some.
Paula, you, I would imagine you're somebody that spends, I would think, oodles of time planning. You have a plan, a strategy, don't you?
There have been seasons in my life when that's more true and seasons in my life when that's less true. I don't think that, you know, I'm 37. I don't think I can say that I've done anything consistently for the last almost 2 decades of being an adult.
But don't you think that that's kind of the fun part, though? Like, I used to get pushback from people on building a financial plan. And maybe it was they didn't want to work with me, and I'm okay with that. Like that was fine. But I remember people tell me, why would I put a plan together? Because it's, you know, the second I put it together, it's outdated.
Right. That reminds me, there's an expression, planning is everything, but plans are nothing.
Nice.
So the act of planning, the act of thinking something through and developing an idea about it, even if that idea is loosely held, even if you know that it's a dynamic, living, breathing document that will always be in flux, just that act of planning is arguably more important than the plan itself.
I know there's a coaching organization I belong to and go to once a quarter, and just those 4 days, and OG had to, by the way, convince me to start going to this thing.
Drag you to it.
Yeah. Cause I thought taking those days, but I got to tell you, man, taking those 4 days to just think about the plan has made the other 361 days so much more powerful and on point. But there's people on the other end, Paula. Like, planning for 4 days a year is fine, but I also know people that were all about the planning, but once it came time to begin rolling, right? Didn't want to do it. So when does planning end and procrastination sets in?
I think if that's what's happening, I think deep down you'll know. I say that for every person listening. If you are planning to such an extent that you're wallowing in the analysis paralysis phase, I think deep down, you know that that's what's going on. I don't know if there's a definitive, like, once you cross X metric, then this is going to apply in your situation. I think that's one of the more qualitative, you know it when you see it.
How do you knock people off of the procrastination game, Bo?
I think here's the reality. I was just thinking as Paula was talking is that sometimes the procrastination is, if I do this work, then I've got to do something. Then I've got to be held accountable to what I might do in that work. So it's easier to just keep putting it off. And I think the key is kind of, we were having that conversation earlier, is can we tie it to something our people or you're excited about, and then give them a real exciting reason to take action steps and plan? Because if it's just to make the spreadsheet work out for a lot of people, that's just not that exciting.
That's so funny, Bo. I love your approach with the carrot. I was more of a stick guy. I would say if we don't start this right away, here's much money we've wasted by not doing this the last 6 months. How long do you want to pay this cost? Like I was on the other side. I prefer your method, actually.
I think it depends on the person. You can see real quick who's motivated by what, you know.
That's true. How do you handle that, OG?
I'm with Bo. I mean, it really kind of just depends on who you're talking to and kind of that motivating factor. I think what's interesting is, especially if you're working with a couple, each of them have different motivations as well. And sometimes you can incentivize the whole group by like kind of thumbing one of the, you know what I mean? Like one of the people in the partnership, like, well, Joe said that he's okay with working until 70. So I guess we'll put what Joe said, we're not working till 70, you know, you go, oh, well, if you don't want to do that, then this is the other way to do it, you know? But I think our job is not so much to carry or stick anybody, so to speak, but just hold up the mirror and just say, this is what's really happening. And I'm not going to give you a rosier than better picture. You know, I'm not going to make it look really great. I'm not going to make it look bad, but I'm going to make it how it is. And what you choose to do with that information is up to you. And I can tell you the impact of your decisions. But, you know, if you want to plan on work until you're in your 70s, that's great. My grandfather worked till he was 90. So he didn't need a lot of retirement money, you know. But if you want to retire when you're 55, then that's a different plan, different path. So
I love the idea of having somebody to hold the mirror up. And I don't think we have enough of those people in our life. I feel like we need to be that for each other more often. Let me go through some specific instances and you tell me if this is something that you can put together a strategy for, or should you just get moving? OG, I'll start with you. Credit card debt, just get moving or put together a whole strategy first?
Ooh, that's a good one. There's pros and cons to both. I think that you have to commit to it first. I think you just have to start throwing money at it. And once you've demonstrated your ability to throw money at it, then you can sit down and figure out what the best way to throw money at it is.
Paula?
With credit cards specifically, I think you can start by just starting. Start by throwing money at it. And then shortly after that, sit down and make a plan. But don't let the idea that you need to make a plan keep you from getting started.
Did you just say exactly what OG just said, but in different words?
Yeah, basically.
To state it better, though, OG.
Well, you asked me the same question.
At least you know. Paula's got your back. Agree, Bo? That's Do you agree with their approach?
Here's the thing. What I see a lot of times with credit card, when people come in with an issue, is if they're paying a little bit extra on everything, thinking they're making progress, sometimes they're kind of treading water. So maybe a little bit of organization to say, here's your action items, and I want to hold you accountable to this, and we'll restructure. Give them a simple 1, 2, 3 action step maybe, because I do see that a lot where they think they're doing the right thing, but they're kind of just not as efficient if they had just a little bit of a plan there.
But yours is for people that are already paying money down toward the debt, haven't really started plowing it. Let's stick with you. What about buying life insurance?
Yeah, I think that's one of those things, of course. If you find a need and you can do it while you're healthy, I've dealt with a lot of people that come in and want it, of course, reactively after something's happened and they can't get it. So I think having the conversations, is there a true need? There's a lot of life insurance sold out there where there's not needs, right? Just to sell for to be sold. But if there's a need and you can do it, it's one of the most leveraged pieces of money I can find to protect you and your family. So I think that's a do it now.
But it sounds like coming as an educated customer, when you say there's a lot of people selling life insurance that's not needed.
Right. Yeah. I think that's it, is if you come in and somebody's positioning life insurance as part of your strategy, I want you to be able to explain why do I need this? What does this solve? What does this tool in my plan solve? Is it to pay off the mortgage? Is it to replace an income? And then that way it's not just, it's being sold to you because this is what this person sells.
I was laughing, by the way, when you were talking about insurances, because I had a few times where somebody would come in wanting disability coverage or long-term care, and I would ask what happened, and there was always some diagnosis they had just gotten. Like, always the only time. And you're like, yeah, it's too late. We can't do that now. Paula, would you like to say what Bo said?
But nicer, please. In a better way.
Well, to add to that, one of the challenges of buying long-term disability coverage or even short-term disability coverage is that the insurance people immediately suspect you. I remember having some conversations with some person who was selling insurance at a time in which I wanted to buy a long-term disability plan. And I could, he was grilling me on what happened. And for me, nothing had happened, but I'm in the financial world. And so I was motivated for that reason. You know, I knew that this is a benefit that other people are getting from their jobs and being self-employed, not having a job that gave me a benefit like that. I wanted to create that benefit for myself, right? That's what self-employed people do. And man, just there, the system's not set up for that. That was originally the problem with buying your own health insurance, was before there was a mandate, people who needed it didn't buy it. And so again, you go to buy health insurance. I remember buying health insurance pre-ACA, and it was like, okay, well, what do you need this for?
Yeah.
Are you sick?
It was just a dirty pool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's change that. What about estate plan? Get your will.
I don't get to talk about the dirty pool of insurance.
But you would go.
Come on, man.
Is that your favorite topic?
I was ready to rock.
Well, how about if we pivot back? OG, no. What do you think about the dirty pool of insurance?
Nope. No comments. My mom said I have to say nice things, because if I can't say nice things about insurance people, I can't say anything at all. So
what about getting your will done then? Let's go there. All right. Get it well, done.
Let's talk about lawyers, because that's way better. Your estate plan. I think your estate plan needs to have a plan. I think the estate plan in a box is a slippery slope, you know, and maybe it works for some people. Maybe it works for like kind of the really, really, really simple stuff. But as soon as you add any sort of complexity there, spouse, children, any reasonable amount of money that people are going to argue about, I think it makes sense to really kind of sit down and think about what you want to have happen with your stuff in case you're not around to handle it. And certainly once you have kids, now you have to think about what do you want to have happen to them? Like, who do you want to be in charge, and how do you want them to get to think through like what you want their life to be like? And sometimes that dovetails into the insurance type stuff, like we were talking about before. When you realize, okay, I'm the breadwinner. I'm the person who makes sure that we can go to Disney every so often. So I want that to continue if I'm not around. So how do I make sure that can continue and pay the mortgage off and fund college and all that sort of stuff? And you start putting dollars to that. Then you can figure out on the insurance side, well, what does that look like now? Now it's this number. Now what sort of tool do I want to use? Because insurance comes in a lot of different flavors. So people go at it the other way. Instead, they go, well, my company gives me 2x salary, so that must be enough.
So there we go. Right.
So I'll take that, yeah. You know, and you're like, no, you're underinsured by tenfold, you know, at that number, at least probably. So estate planning, I don't think you can I don't think estate planning is something you can just walk in and get done in an afternoon.
But I like how Paula that OG still slips in his comments about life insurance, even though he said he wasn't going to, still found a way to get that done.
Whenever somebody has some strong thoughts on an issue, it comes out one way or the other. It
does. When you squeeze an orange juice comes out, doesn't it? Doesn't matter what the external circumstances are.
And so do the little seeds, which is what we got there. Yes, the they pop out. Yeah.
Something though interesting about the estate planning is you're talking about, that's another one of those items 90% of people I talk to, something we need to do or it's 20 years old and outdated. It's not been done yet. It's one of those reactive decisions people do. They mean to do it. They say it's important, but a lot of times it's not addressed until after the fact.
It's such a terrible thing. How exciting is it to sit down and think about not just your own demise, but like the extension of the next 70 years without you, right? Like if I die today, I expect my kids to be alive for the next century. And I have to account for them for a portion of that time, if not all of it, plus their kids and stuff like that. And you're envisioning all this stuff and you're like, this is terrible. I don't skip. I'll do it later.
I'm thinking about mine. Mine is outdated now. I mean, mine probably should have been done 6 years ago, redone. It was a really comprehensive plan, but made for when my kids were until they were 18. And now I would do things completely different than the way I have it laid out.
So, and the maturity that they exhibit from 18 to 25, like they are now, you know, that changes your opinion and the trajectory of their careers and the people they're hanging around with and the habits they get into and all that sort of stuff. You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the grandmother who's probably erasing her grandkids from the estate plan, you know, and she's 90. Like, you SOB stole $60 million from me. You're out.
It was so horrible. We'll link to it in the show notes, but a grandmother was suing her grandsons who were her brokers who were ripping her off. So they were getting written out of the will. And that was a pretty big estate too. That was
like $100 million.
It was $100 million estate. Yeah. Yeah.
And they just had to like treat grandma right. She's 93 for crying out loud.
They got $3 million in commissions for doing it and missed out on the other $97
million. Wow.
But they put it all in Dogecoin. So
you put $3 million in Dogecoin. You had $100 million for like a day and then you went back to three. Bo, I want to ask you, as somebody with kids, what about teaching your kids about money? Have a strategy or go in and just on a daily basis as you mess up with your money to bring your kids along?
I think it needs to be intentional. I think it's looking for learning opportunities to teach financial lessons, right? Age appropriate. The 2.5-year-old is kind of tough right now, but we did a lot with the firm. We'd go into some of the local middle schools and high schools, and there's age appropriate things where, I mean, what happens, a lot of these things we're talking about on the spreadsheet, it would be beautiful if everybody started saving in their 20s, like Adam or Barney or Charles, whichever one that was, right? If everybody started then, but life doesn't work like a spreadsheet, right? And a lot of, if you're like me, it took me a long time to get established and serious and thinking about the future. So yeah, I think it's something we should look for, intentional opportunities to teach our kids about money. The parents that I've found that have their kids say it was the best gift they've ever gotten.
I absolutely love that. I don't think it has to be a complete thought out, like I'm going to create this big, huge curriculum, but as the opportunity comes up, make sure that you grab it.
And I'm sure there's some books on that. If not, there needs to be, about age appropriate ways to teach kids. That'd be excellent. So you don't have to overthink it.
And actually what's funny is we know several of those. So we'll link to those in the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Those are the big ones that I was thinking about. Is there any other thing that where you think people might get it wrong, guys?
I don't know about getting things wrong, but I think there's such a great opportunity, especially like this time of year, as people are transitioning from college to their professional careers or from high school into their professional careers. It's just that time of the season that if you're a college kid and you've been making, you know, $15 an hour or $6 an hour waiting tables or whatever, and you're figuring out how to make it work on $8,000 a year, and you just got your first job making $70,000, just max out your 401k. Just don't even think about it, because going from making $10,000 a year to making 60 is awesome. It's also really awesome to go from 10 to 40. Like, you don't know the difference. So just do the stuff that you know that you got to do anyway. Buy your disability insurance, or you probably don't need a comprehensive estate plan if you just got out of college, but set up all those systems in advance and then you're done with it. You never have to think about it again. You know, you've already maxed out your Roth and you maxed out your 401k. You're good, man. Just do that for 25 years. You'll be a gazillionaire.
We're going to call that OG's takeaway from today's piece. We'll let our guest of honor, Bo, go last. Paula, big idea from today's piece.
I mean, I would say a sort of a modified version of me saying the same thing again is start early, because then you give yourself options. If you begin aggressively saving and investing at a young age, and you will never be younger than you are now, and you do that for the next 10 years, you set yourself up in a much better position than someone who hasn't done that. And that means that 10 years into the future, 20 years into the future, you now have more flexibility. So if you need to take your foot off the gas pedal for a while, you can.
Bo, you've got the last word.
The word for me is clarity. It's always clarity on all these conversations. If we can have a conversation and get clear on what it is we're trying to accomplish, whether it's the insurance conversation, the estate planning conversation, and we can make some of those decisions now, it's a lot less daunting than if we're just saying, like we were talking about earlier, oh, you're supposed to put 5% in your 401k and there's a, it's just kind of random. And I also think one of the things I did, this came up earlier as a takeaway. I've got two, sorry. The second takeaway bonus takeaway. Charge extra. Bonus, right. I'm going to get charged for this one. But the other is I was thinking about the estate planning. This comes up a lot specifically, and I think it applies to all of these, is a lot of people will not do that work because they're afraid they'll make a wrong decision. So a way I've found to deal with that is, what if we say, let's set up a plan that's good for right now? And sometimes that can promote action to get it done, and knowing you have permission to change it anytime in the future, because sometimes that what if we pick the wrong beneficiary? What if we pick the wrong person to take care of the kids, and people will never address it? So when I can make them think of a shorter timeline and know you have permission to change in the future, sometimes that can spur some action that needs to be taken.
Well, usually here in the middle of our Friday show, we have a Friday FinTech segment where we talk about something cool on your phone or computer that you might not know anything about. We learn about it together. Today, however, and a few times a year, we're all about health and wellness, because who cares about your goals if you're not healthy enough to reach those goals? And Bo, this is going to be old friend day for you, because the guy I'm about to introduce is Mr. Angelo Poli from MetPro, and you and Angelo are friends.
That going way back. So, and Angelo has done amazing things. He was talking about this vision of this thing he was going to build, and it's there. He made it. He did it.
It is totally there. So if you have a vision of a healthier body, whether it's through diet, exercise, but as Angelo will say, probably both, we're answering some of your questions today. So let's say hi to Angelo Poli from MetPro. Hey, I'm back with us again, Mr. Angelo Poli. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Love being back in the basement, Joe.
It's so fun having you every time. And we've got some great questions from our listeners. So let's just dive in, dude. You and I have talked a lot lately about diet, nutrition, metabolism. Let's talk about workouts.
Let's do it.
Nikki says, what's the best way to build core muscles?
Work the core, Nikki.
Wow. There it is. Next question.
So let me define core muscles. So the infomercial at 2 a.m, core means abs. You know, you see the fitness model with the great abs. But, you know, in sports and performance, and in my book, core is any large muscle group that is attached to the major bones of the body, not the axilla. In other words, not your forearms, not your lower legs. We're talking about your pelvis, your spine, the femur bones, any of the large muscles attached to those. Those are core muscles that are going to play a role in posture and stabilizing your body. So you definitely want to do the traditional ab training, core training, stomach and erectors of the low back. But I would also incorporate at least one movement for each complex of muscle groups. So a pushing motion, a pulling motion, and some sort of squatting or big ticket multi-joint lower body movement, even if it's not with load, to work all of the major core muscles in addition to all of the ab exercise that most of us are already familiar with.
Boy, even the squats without load for me is just that is tough.
Oh, you feel it.
Oh yeah, you definitely feel it. Just, I don't know, just with my own weight level. This is a question from Alan. Exercise recommendations for someone recovering from significant sciatic pain, bulging disc. People often feel pain. I right now have a issue in the back of my ankle. And, you know, sometimes you think, Angelo, you think I'm just going to power through this and that works. And other times this might be something more. What, somebody who's had significant pain?
Yeah, don't do that. As someone who has walked with a cane for a large portion of my 20s, listen to your body. If you're having sciatica, what you want to do is you want to go and talk to your doctor, figure out, okay, what's going to make it better? What's going to make it worse? Now, once you get that all squared away and you're at the point where your therapist, your doctor says, go and strengthen your body, go and do exercise, then as far as a good place to start, I would say actually the exact same thing that I said for the last person, which is for the core.
Yeah.
Don't ignore, pick a simple push, a pull. So a push can be as simple as a push-up. It can be off your knees. A pull is easy if you have access to a gym. You could do like a cable row or a lat pull down. If you don't have access to a gym, you could do a makeshift TRX row. If you've ever seen like TRX straps, you can come up with something similar to that. If you have a straight bar to hold on to, it's called an Australian row. But there's a lot of ways to makeshift a simple row movement. And then importantly, I would look for a lower body movement that is not going to compress the spine. So you could do a body weight squat. You could do a ball squat where you're putting a Swiss ball or the exercise ball between you and the wall, leaning back. And that's a great movement because you can control how deep you go, what the intensity is. Again, all of this, check to see with your doctor what your circumstance is. Sometimes with sciatica, we're talking disc and nerve involvement. So that's a whole different ball of wax. But assuming that you're ready to strengthen the muscles, incorporate some of that and then look for cardio that's not going to put a lot of stress and torque on the discs and the joint of your spine. So ellipticals are really popular just for that. Bikes, upright bikes, some people, recumbent bike, though that is in a seated position. And some people swear by swimming.
Yeah.
So, there's a number of things you can do. And if you don't have access to that, you have access to a treadmill, but you're not ready to run, do incline walking. Just a mild incline can increase the intensity even without running. So there's a few things that you can, of course, check with your healthcare providers as to whether or not it's safe for you, but there's a starting point.
Somebody asked here, they could do either a stationary bike or do a treadmill. Which one? They have money for one of the two. Which one do you think would be better?
I got it. There you go. So the answer is depends. I want you to get the one that you enjoy the most. So I would say a lot of people ask me this and I tell them go to a gym or borrow, rent, you know, whatever for an afternoon. Try them because that's an investment. You're going to make an investment. It's going to take up space in your house. You want to get it right. So try out a recumbent bike or a upright bike. Try out a treadmill. If you don't have the ability to try anything out, a treadmill is good because it's one exercise I know you've done before. I mean, I think you've walked. So I know that it's not going to be like, wow, this is such a weird sensation. I've never moved my legs
like this. This is so strange.
But some people will sit down in a bike and be like, oh, yeah, I don't really like this. Other people love it. So additional factors are there's some machines where you can add a measure of resistance so it becomes hypertrophic and you can actually use it to train some of the muscles of your lower body. So that can be a benefit. But back to square one, go ahead and try it and then do whichever one you feel like you'll be consistent with more often.
I've got just two more questions for you. One, okay. I just want to circle back to Kathy's question, which I know we've talked about this a little bit before, but I think we've been talking so much about exercise. But today we talked about exercise and about fuel. And Kathy, spin instructor, if you remember Kathy, spin instructor, mm-hmm. she talks about the importance of fuel in the morning. And where do you sit on the intermittent fasting thing we talked about earlier and early morning workouts?
Okay. So again, depends. So I view that, so you can do fasting state cardio. I view that as a advanced technique in that most people will get more benefit out of just consistent balanced meals spread evenly throughout the day, eating before they exercise. Just the average person. Now, if somebody is already very consistent and structured with their nutrition throughout the day, and they want to purposefully schedule a day where they're bumping their breakfast back to get fasting state cardio first and still getting good nutrition, eating right after their exercise, and then spread out evenly throughout the day getting meals, more power to you. You can do that. What you're doing is you're sacrificing a little bit of performance and muscle optimization for a little bit of fat burning optimization. We're not talking a huge swing. We're just talking a slight quarter turn of the dial. But if you're the type of person where your eating schedule is somewhat haphazard, adding to that missing breakfast is probably simply going to, like the 24-hour day in the middle of your week, it could be more of a bomb than a benefit, because overall, whatever's repeatable and consistent is going to be better. So if you're uncertain and you're just experimenting, you're probably going to actually put more energy and calories into better workouts if you fuel in advance. If you are more advanced and you're already cruising at a pretty high altitude with your schedule and you want to experiment with how your body feels doing fasting state cardio, then I would just say make sure you eat right after.
Gotcha. Last question. I think this is a great one to end on. Jen has a question. Says, how do you overcome lack of motivation to work out? I know you guys work with so many people, Angelo, and as you know, there's days you want to go and days you don't. She says, I know it'll be good for me. I know I need to do it for my health, but I always have an excuse as to why I can't, or I'm just so exhausted of the thought of putting out the effort, ...
That's a great question. And I have a very specific answer. I want you to exercise 5 days a week. And it's just, it's the line in the sand you don't budge on. I want you to exercise 5 days a week, but it is up to you, Jen, what your entry point is. Maybe your exercise is doing 30 crunches in the morning and a plank, or doing some bodyweight squats, or walking on the treadmill literally for 6 minutes. But something that you can do each day, because exactly what you said is, how do I get the motivation? Is you have to establish a routine. So I would much rather you do something for 5 to 10 minutes that you can reproduce daily versus something much bigger that we're not consistent with yet. You can always add on. So when I start, and you know, everybody's schedule is different, but just as a general rule, what I like to get my clients into is, you know, hey, Johnny, look, you exercise Monday through Friday. Now, I know life happens. If you miss a day, then you can do makeup on the weekend. Like, well, I don't have that much time. Like, do you have 5 minutes a day? Well, yeah, I have 5 minutes. It's like, great. Like, well, I could probably do 10. No, five's good. You show me that you can get 2 weeks straight of just doing 5 minutes, then we'll go to 10. Then we'll go to 12. By the time we get to 15, you're going to see results. And those results, that's going to motivate you. So just start with the routine is more important than the activity itself day one. So that way by day 30 and by day 60, now you're in shape to push forward and really make some great progress.
I wish you loved what you did. Just people.
I don't like this very much. I can't wait to get off. Yeah, this is just driving me crazy.
People don't get to see the enthusiasm with which you present this stuff. And it's always so great. You guys,
thank you.
You guys have a couple of great tools for people. The basis of MetPro is concierge coaching. And yeah. I use a MetPro coach, but you also have, for people that just want the technology, they can use the tool online to get the MetPro app. Talk about both of those things for a moment, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So we've been a coaching company for years. I've been doing this for 2 decades. Basically, what we've done is we've have all of these analytics tools that we've developed. Frankly, they were for our coaches to get them sharper and sharper and better at what they do, giving them all these tools to work with their clients. And they have just evolved over time to where somebody who wants to kind of take their own journey but utilize our tools on the way can do so. So wherever your starting point is, we have something to take care of you with. We can help you out, even if it's just a conversation and doing some strategy. So if you want to reach out, feel free. One of our consultants can visit with you and just get to know you a little, give you some tips, and send you on your way. And at any point, if you want a little more horsepower, we got you covered there also.
And it's a great conversation, no matter what, Stackers. The conversation that I had just leading into it was really good. I mean, questions about just your body type. Like, I didn't realize just different people just have different body types, and figuring out that starting point, it was such a, I don't know. It was even that first discussion was really enlightening. So it's metpro.co. It's not .com. It's .co. metpro.co/SB for more. So we'll have a link to it in our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. Angelo, great talking to you again, my friend. Have a fantastic summer. And I'm sure we'll be circling back with you in the fall to see how we get ready for the second half of the year.
Can't wait, Joe. Have a good one.
Hey,
Hey, trivia fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Duggan. Have you heard? We're about to start doing these Friday shows live on an app called Fireside. One of the Fireside backers is a guy you might have heard of named Mark Cuban, or, you know, Marky Mark, as I refer to him. So today's trivia question is, Cuban made his way into the Guinness Book of Records in 1999 by making what was then the largest single e-commerce transaction for a Gulfstream 5 private jet. So how much did he pay for the jet? I'll be back with your answer faster than a jet can take off.
All right, if you're brand new to the show, our three normal contributors, Paula, OG, and Len Penzo, who has the day off. So, Bo, you're going to be taking the place of Len Penzo today. They have a year-long competition going. Len is the returning champion, but in a two weird twist of fates. Number one is OG has a 3-point lead. He has 9. Ooh. In another twist of fate, Paula is tied for second with 6.
Woo!
Never happens this early in the year, which means you also, Bo, you and Len together have 6. So because you are representing the returning champion, you're going to go in the middle. Paula gets to go last, and OG is going to kick this off. So a Gulfstream 5 private jet in 1999, OG. I wish you knew something about aviation.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great? So this was some kind of record? Like, would he buy it on his credit card or something? Or he did it online?
This was at the time the largest e-commerce transaction. Think about the year, 1999. Who's buying? So people are buying a few books from this little store in Seattle online, right? You're not buying a ton of stuff in 99.
So he went online. He went on Yahoo or something and went, I'll take it. Is that that?
It was an e-commerce transaction. Yep.
Such foo-foo words. Okay. 1999, you said?
1999.
A Gulfstream 5. So a G6 nowadays, brandy new, I feel like is in the like 60-ish million range, maybe 70. So G5 is a precursor to that. I'm going to say $31.5
million. $31.5
million,
Bo.
I like that. OG got me in the ballpark by giving me an upper limit there.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, $31.5 million. I'm going to go a little higher, say $35.
$35 million for Bo. Well, Paula.
Oh, you know what this means.
I don't know what it means. Tell me what it means. What does it mean, Bo?
It means I now have to decide if it's greater than $35 million or less than
$1 above.
Exactly. Or is it less than 31.5?
What if it's in the middle?
I mean, there is some possibility of that, but I would say that.
I love how Paula treats $4.5 million like it's a rounding error. Just no, who cares?
Balance of probability. I'm going to go with 31.49999.
And that's the way it gets done, people. Right there. Well, we would love to tell you who's got this. Is it Bo at 35, OG with 31.5, or Paula with 31.499? We'll let you know here in just a minute. Did you know, with a more reward credit card from Navy Federal Credit Union, Stackers, you pay off your credit cards in full every time, you could then earn 3 times the points at supermarkets, food delivery, and gas, plus 1 point on everything else. Now, you're going to earn those either way, but really, if you pay off your credit card every month, it makes it well worth it to play that game. Do not go after reward points if you're not. But I'll tell you, what I love about this card is your rewards won't expire while your account's open. You can redeem them for cash, travel, gift cards, and more. You know how many reward points I've had expire? I've just tons. Plus, the more rewards cards, contactless. You can make payments quickly and securely with just a tap of your card. Speaking of rewards, by the way, you can get a Navy Federal auto loan and reward yourself if it's time for a new car. Applying's easy. You can do it on their mobile app, online, or by phone. And it's so fast, you could get a decision in seconds. Right now, rates are as low as 1.79% APR. Plus, with Navy Federal's car buying service powered by TrueCar, You can shop, compare, and save on your next new or used car. I have done this. It will save you tons and tons of money to use Navy Federal's car buying service powered by TrueCar. It is incredible. So whether it's your first car, your dream car, Navy Federal can help you cruise into that new ride that has a monthly payment that you can actually afford and not one that the dealer tells you you can afford. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Insured by NCUA, open to the armed forces, the DOD, veterans, and their families like me. American Express is a registered service mark of American Express used by Navy Federal under license. Credit and collateral subject to approval, rates subject to change and are based on creditworthiness, rate available for new vehicles. Message and data rates may apply. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information and to apply. Well, you know, when I think about Navy Federal, I think about the veterans that have done so much for our country. And I also think about some of our active service members. Want to say a special shout out to my nephews, Colin and Nathan, who are both in the Navy. Colin is stationed outside Seattle, Washington on a submarine. And my nephew, Nathan, is in South Africa as an air traffic controller. And in Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants you also to celebrate members, many of whom go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. It's all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their family are eligible for Navy Federal membership. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see all of their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Well, OG, you kicked it off with 31.5, and it looks like you've got a narrow runway, my friend.
Heyo. Lord knows I need as much width as possible these days.
And speaking of as much width as possible, you were telling me about a landing you had recently in a plane that was a little back and forth.
A little gusty. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
You used the entire runway.
All 150 feet of it. Left and right. And some of the grass. We looked at the grass. We didn't land on the grass. Be clear.
That just is more thrilling than I would want in my plane ride. Bo, you've got the top
end. Maybe some of this is make believe. I'm not sure.
You got the top end at $35 million.
It's cap.
Could be higher. You could have it.
It could be.
It could be. Paula, how confident you feeling at 31.499?
I mean, I like that I have the entire span of zero through 31.49. Like it's a large
chunk.
It's a large runway.
But the last time you bought a Gulfstream, what did that cost?
You know, a smidge. A smidge. Yeah. Cost a little.
A touch.
Yes.
All right, Doug.
A rounding. More than a rounding error.
Doug, what's our answer here?
Hey, Stackers, it's me, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And, you know, I think this is the final straw. Joe told me earlier that Mark Cuban routinely makes appearances on Fireside. And he might even stop by and listen in on the live show when we start next week. Are you out there, Marky Mark? Are you listening right now? We could do this whole podcasting thing together, man. We'll start small, though, with a trivia question about the man himself, Mark Cuban, who made his way into the Guinness Book of Records in 1999 by making what was then the largest single e-commerce transaction for a Gulfstream 5 private jet. How much did the jet cost? Well, Cuban bought his new toy for $40 million. 40 million bucks! Mark could afford to buy that private jet because in 1999, he sold his company, Broadcast.com, to Yahoo for $5.7 billion, personally netting a cool $2 billion in the process. Now that is a lot of moolah. See ya!
All right. Whoa. I'm so excited that the first two times I was on the show, I was not even in the ballpark. So to actually win one. There you go, Lynn. That's for you, buddy.
You just keep throwing darts, Bo. Just keep throwing the darts. That's right.
Yes. This means I am no longer tied for last. I'm back to last again.
But it's got to feel comfortable, Paula. It's a comfortable feeling. It's like an old sweater, isn't it?
Reversion to the last.
But it's too early. Like, you always roar in the fall, like September, October. This is out of season for you. So
yeah. Well, I was hoping to get an early start. I still am. It's just a minor temporary setback.
It's just a flesh wound.
Exactly.
Hey guys, let's answer a stacker question. If you're somebody, by the way, that has lots of questions on doing better with your money and you'd like a guide to our Monday and Wednesday shows, comprehensive guide, by the way, I'm very proud of them. StackyBenjamins.com/stacker. Also, starting early next year, we're taking the show on the road. We're going to do 7 live shows, go to like 32 cities, I think we're up to. So StackyBenjamins.com/stacker to be the first to get all of that information. But today, we're going to help stacker Tristan get ahead with his money. Say hi, Tristan.
Hey, Joe and OG. And if you're listening from the bunker, Len Penzo, my name is Tristan. I'm from Eureka, Illinois. And I had a question about precious metals. Is it worth investing in if you already have an established retirement account with a W-2 job, such as my 401k? And I also have a Roth IRA that I just started investing into. But I heard that it was good to put a small chunk of your money into precious metals. Just wanted to know your guys' insight on that. And Doug, I know you didn't have a good run in 2020, but I'm rooting for you in 2024. See ya.
Awesome. Hopefully Doug decides to run again. We need all the Doug in Washington, I think, that we can get. Thanks for the question there, Tristan. And by the way, Tristan being from Eureka, Illinois, do you think you pronounce that Eureka or you think you pronounce that? I'm from Eureka, Illinois. No?
You got to do something with that.
You got to. Yes. If I'm from Eureka, I don't know.
There was a town, Hamilton, Ohio, where they changed the spelling of the town so that it had an exclamation point at the end. So the official name of the town was Hamilton! Exclamation point.
That's so good.
They
sounds like something
that
people in Ohio would do.
See, that's great. Now there's a town in people from out there will know it was either Arizona or New Mexico called Truth or Consequence. And I think it's New Mexico. And you know, but it's lost on most people today. But that was a game show back in the day. And they changed the name of their town to the game show to attract people to come to the town. And so now it's just a town with a weird name, Truth or Consequence. So Hamilton with an exclamation point, Paula, years from now, people will be like, what the hell's up with the exclamation point?
Exactly.
What's going on? So let's help out Tristan. Bo, let's start with you. Precious metals in a portfolio. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like a lot of these things that come up. And some people, when they're coming in talking about precious metals, it's like, I saw that commercial with Tom Selleck or somebody, right? And I'm all in. I'm convinced, I'm sold, I'm moving my 401k. And my take is precious metals are a diversifier. And if we're in a position to take 5%, I've been okay with a client taking as much as 10% diversifying into metals as a diversifier for the portfolio. But I'm very hesitant when somebody's coming in saying, let's go all in. Not a fan of that at all.
Why does somebody want to add precious metals? We say it's a diversifier. How come?
Well, it acts different than probably their funds and their managed money or their assets in the rest of their portfolio. So when the market's not doing great, that might hold up better. You know, metals are a good holder of value and it acts different. A lot of people, I think the big reason we see people come in is they're scared to death of the fear that the dollar is going to become worthless and they're going to need to go to the grocery store. So they need to have bags and bags of silver and gold in their basement to go buy groceries.
Is that going to happen?
I don't think so. I think we've got a long way to go before it gets to that point. Again, to me, it's a diversifier. I'm okay with that. It could be a good thing, and it's going to act different than the rest of your portfolio.
And Tristan, by the way, I realize why you said Len Penzo, but we already know Len Penzo's take on this. Len would say yes and more and more and more. Like that's
what I was talking about when I said those people that say 100% go all in, I was thinking of Len.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. and move to your bunker underground as well. Paula, precious metals?
I agree with both. You want some minor diversification into precious metals, then cool. It's a low correlation asset. You can have some diversification that, you know, doesn't have a high correlation with other types of asset classes in your portfolio. It's arguably a hedge against inflation. So that's great, but you want to keep the asset allocation reasonable.
Not that it really matters, because I don't think that because one person does something, other people should. But do either of you guys have precious metals in your portfolio? Paula, do you have any precious metals?
I do not, but I do have cryptocurrencies, and I believe that they are a bit of a digital gold or a digital precious metals.
Bo, how about you?
I have a few things, some gold and silver, but I keep it in a safe. I have tangible gold things.
Which is the way Len likes to buy it, too. He thinks if you're going to hold it for the grocery store, you should have it. OG, do you agree?
I disagree with everything. I think that buying gold or silver, especially in a investment product, is a waste of money and energy. It's generally 10 times more expensive than your run-of-the-mill, call it S&P fund or something like that. And I can't get behind the idea that, well, this time it's going to be magically so much better than the greatest 500 companies in the entire United States, or, you know, whatever index you want to use, all the companies in the entire world. Gold hasn't done anything in 40 years and has bits periods of time. Like last year, I think silver was up like freaking 80%, and people go, well, see, there you go. I should have had silver. It's like, cool. What did the S&P do during that time? Oh, weird. Also up that same amount with way less volatility. I think like the whole, maybe we need to have some other sorts of ways to buy bullets and bread in case the economy collapses. Okay.
See, I will. But yeah.
I think that there's so much other crap that would go wrong long before that becomes an issue, that you're not going to take a bar of silver and like a whittling knife and be like, what do you guys think? Like that amount is good for, I need some soup. Like, so I'll just shave some off. They'll just kill you and take what you have. Like, haven't you seen Book of Eli? Like that movie is very apocalyptic. They just take what they want. They're not going to be reasonable, you know? So I think that's a little bit of a false narrative on like, well, what the economy collapses, like, come on, the economy collapses, like you and your seven pieces of silver are going to make it work. Give me a break. But I think if you look at it from the question within the question, which is, I saw my portfolio go down 40% last year in 17 trading days. I didn't like it. So what do I do to make that not happen? Anytime you take that question and expose it, I guess, for what it is you want lower volatility. Well, there's 1,000 ways to have lower volatility. You can add fixed income. You can add cash. You can add precious metals. You can real estate. Right. There's all sorts of different things. Yeah. It doesn't have to be the Tom Selleck commercial, like Bo said, because I wasn't thinking of Tom Selleck. You know who was in my head when you said the commercial? I was thinking about the dude who was the Secretary of Defense for 24 on the show 24. I can't remember his real name, but I just remember him being that was his character. But
and to be fair, I think Tom Selleck is doing reverse mortgages.
Indeed, he is. Okay. Yeah, those are super awesome too. So we can another question or two on that. So anyways, I don't know. I'm not sold on buy a barrel full of gold and stuff it in your basement just in case.
No, but I remember when I would work on our asset allocation for clients, if I put a little bit in, 2 or 3% that was precious metals, and I would get the difference between cash or bonds is that with precious metals, sometimes we get these weird spikes, as you guys know, right? 8 times more volatility, by the way, precious metals, than you have in the stock market, according to a writer named Walter Updegrave. The issue with cash and with bonds is you take away the chance of a return. And with precious metals, I feel like if you've got 2 to 3% exposure there, it's like just a little bit of pepper in your portfolio. It will calm it down during times of stock market volatility. Of course, this wasn't the same in 2007, 2008. If you guys remember, gold sucked too. Everything. There was nowhere to run.
So BlackRock has a commodity trust index portfolio that you can buy at 75 basis points. It started in July of 2006. If you put $10,000 in it today, you'd have $2,500. Like
hashtag winning.
And it's up 50% in the last year. So like circle that on the little thing, you go like, oh, but it's up 50% this year. Yeah, it's back up to the number it was 5 years ago on the way down. Silver is the same way. 72% last year, started at 10,000 in April of 2006. Today it's 20,000, 14 years later. Yeah, it was worth 40. But by the way, guess when everybody bought it?
Of course.
It's like Bitcoin. When did, well, I bought my Bitcoin at 63,000. I'm not too proud to say that I did. You know, I sure as hell wasn't going to let it see 70,000 without me having some. I can guarantee that.
YOLO.
And it may not turn. It may not be 70,000, but.
No. I think I also see an emotional component to this conversation where something about if I can take $5,000 of this overall portfolio and put something in my house that I can touch and feel, it makes me feel safe. And that emotional security, is that hurting things, or is that if that keeps the rest of your plan on track, does right. that make sense?
No, I totally agree with that, Bo. It's more about you than it is about the market, right? It's more about you and controlling your emotions, which is why I like what you talked about earlier. If we can get some clarity, if we can talk through that, that's good stuff. Tristan, thanks for the call. If you've got a question for us, head to stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail, and we'd be happy to talk through your question as well. And Mr. Penzo wasn't here, but we already know what Mr. Penzo would say to that question. Hey, let's find out what all of you are doing. OG, what's going on this weekend after Memorial Day weekend?
After the weekend of vacation?
The weekend after the weekend of the...
I'm going to probably spend the weekend golfing, I'll be honest.
Oh, that's tough. I feel bad. That's horrible. we'll let our guest of honor go last. Paula, what's happening at the Afford Anything podcast?
On the Afford Anything podcast, we have an interview with Julia Galef. She writes about the scout mindset, which is a mindset of thinking from first principles and developing accurate mental models of the world based on reason. And from this, we can make better investing choices. So that is on the Afford Anything podcast. Plus, of course, every other episode, this wacky dude named Joe Saul-Sehy joins me to answer questions from the audience. And I know, right?
And we have so much fun. We recorded just a look. What's that look for? Like one of us has goodness. Fun.
I was just thinking about the last thing that we recorded.
Just pulling back the curtain here a little bit about Afford Anything recordings. These will sometimes run long, but we recorded for, I think, 2 to 2.5 hours and answered 3 questions.
Wow. Yep. We started our call at about 3:15 and we ended it at 6 p.m.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? That's true.
We chit-chatted for like 30 minutes first.
A lot. We did.
But still.
That's right.
It was 3 hours of being on Skype with Joe to answer 3 questions.
I know it's a dream come true for most of you, but Paula gets it every other week at the Afford Anything podcast. We'll link to that in our show notes as well. And by the way, that woman sounds interesting. That is a great topic.
Julia Galef. Yeah, I've been following her on Twitter for a number of years. She's a great writer in the metacognition, thinking about how to think space.
Well, it sounds totally up your alley too, the stuff you like to.
Completely.
Yep. But I also love the fact that you've been following her for a long time. What I love about doing a podcast is we get to talk to these people.
Right.
It's just an excuse to ask them all the annoying questions that you would ask them in exactly. a conversation at dinner. And they'd be like, hey, I don't want to talk about this now.
Exactly.
But on a podcast, we get to. Bo, thanks for hanging out with us again, man.
Hey, I had fun. It was a lot of fun.
If somebody wants to reach you for more financial planning help, where do we find you?
RichLifeAdvisors.com is kind of the hub for everything. Excited. We're going to be doing a version of the Retirement Resource Show that's a live stream. So all kinds of fun stuff could go wrong there. So that could be fun. And something that I'm really excited about, I'm going to cross 200. I've taught a Social Security optimization class here around Metro Atlanta 200 times next week.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I was going to say, OG and I have crossed 200 a couple times, but that was something totally different. That was Angelo Poli related, not...
Very good.
That's awesome. And we'll link to Bo on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. So you guys can write him or call him and let him know you heard him here. All right. That's going to do it for today. Doug, you got it from here, my friend. What should we have learned today?
So what should we have learned today? First, take a lesson from our roundtable discussion. On most life events, action early is a better answer than waiting for the 100% right time. But if something is irrevocable, that's when you should make sure you have some good support and make a wise move. Second, worried about your net worth? How about starting with your health? By improving your wellness game, you'll be able to enjoy your riches as you stack Benjamins. But the big lesson? Don't tell Joe's mom that you'll take her for a ride in the El Camino sometime. Turns out she says sometime is now. Gotta go. To learn more about our guests and for more resources, you can head to our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. To check out Bo Henderson, head over to bohenderson.com. That's Bo spelled the correct way, B-E-A-U. To hear more from Paula Pant, just head to affordanything.com. This show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Karen Rapine, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I swear the worst part about coming over to Joe's mom's house is having to put on pants. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remunerations. That's a big word. There's no way you take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial decisions, consult with a real financial advisor.
All right, let's do a very quick after show.
I sent you a video on Instagram. I don't know if you can play it on this or not.
Is it?
It's like 10 seconds, but it's basically this, the exact open that we had here where you totally missed. You missed the whole fact that we were making fun of something. And I found this wonderful gold piece that I thought I had lying around, but it took me a second to get it.
I don't have Instagram on my iPad.
Well, it was really funny. Anyway, Phil Mickelson was on set. This was from a year ago after the PGA Championship. And they're like, hey, yeah, Phil, we're really happy to have you here. And he goes, well, I'm really good at three things, playing golf and talking golf. And then Nick Faldo goes, what's the third? And you can see Jim Nantz look over and go, I think he's setting you up. And he goes, yeah, but you said you're good at three things. And you see Mickelson goes, and he kind of does that. And Nick Faldo goes, I think I misunderstood something. And Phil goes, yeah, you think? Well, anyways, back at the, and he just moves on to the.
That's funny.
So it just reminded me of that when you, at the very beginning, you know, whatever, anyways.
Yeah. Put that
good in. Good at three things, making podcasts, eating dinner.
Bam. There it is. OG, what's going on this weekend after Memorial Day weekend?
The weekend after the weekend of vacation?
The weekend after the weekend of the...
I'm going to probably spend the weekend golfing, I'll be honest.
Oh, that's tough. I feel bad. That's horrible. Paula, what's happening at the Afford Anything podcast?
When is this airing? Which
the weekend after Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. We just went over this, didn't we?
Are you asking the same question?
Yeah.
Well, Stackers, the show might be over, but the celebrations are just beginning because it is Military Appreciation Month that I want to celebrate people like my brother-in-law, Eric, who is such a giving person. Eric will do just anything for you. And as a Marine, you can see that his time in the military taught him to be a guy who gives to his community, gives to his family, and is always there when you need them. This Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate members like Eric who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve. Many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. And all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. In fact, there are so many resources on the Navy Federal website, resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life, and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support military families. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you'll see all of their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.